Hi there, and welcome to the Living with SMA podcast. We're here to have conversations about living with spinal muscular atrophy. Throughout this podcast, we will be covering lots of different topics, from preparing for university, getting the most from your personal budget, sex and relationships, and lots more. So we invite different hosts from across the SMA community to come together here. We want to answer your questions, provide you with useful tips and recommendations, and also share personal stories. So please do reach out and connect with us here at the charity SMA UK. Thank you for listening, and we hope you find the podcast useful.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Living with SMA podcast. This is episode 3, Renting in the UK. Following on from the previous episode with Julian, we're going to look about some of the challenges that I've faced around finding and renting accommodation here in the UK, and looking at my journey moving away from home at 18 years old to finding accommodation and living independently on my own. So I really hope you find some really useful insights in this podcast and enjoy. What we're going to do is talk a little bit around about renting, whether that be council accommodation, renting in the private sector, and some of the challenges that I faced growing up and moving away from home and trying to find accommodation, and also what I've been through in order to get the accommodation adapted for my needs. And Julian talked a lot about his experiences, and this session is kind of for me to explain around this rented space. So to kind of set the scene, I'm 27 now. I moved away from home at 18 years of age. I went to university, managed to get accommodation at university, which was all adapted, very straightforward and accessible. And there's another conversation down the care route, which I think we touched off in previous conversations. But ultimately, all the adaptations were covered for me whilst I was at university. And what was happening is I was flicking to and from uni and home, which was obviously all fully adapted for me. When the challenge started arising was when I wanted to go on a placement year at university. As part of my degree, I could do a sandwich course, which gave me a year out in industry. And when you're applying for a job, you don't know where you're going to be, right? You could be, you could go to Europe, you could go to America, you could be up in Scotland. You know, you go where the job is available. You shouldn't be going somewhere because somewhere is accessible. You should be going to where, you know, you want to work. And I applied for all sorts of jobs all over the country, and I got offered a job. Literally, I'd moved back into uni on my final year, and I got offered a job on that Friday, and I was starting the final year of uni on the Monday, and I literally had 2 months, right, 2 months to find somewhere in the private rented sector in Reading to find an accessible accommodation. And guess what? I didn't find anything. So how did I do it? Well, it was with great difficulty. So originally they wanted to put me into a care home, because it was the only way that I could quickly access accommodation to start doing a placement. And fortunately, one wise care home said, this is not a place for a young man like you. And fortunately, I wasn't put there. And I wasn't confident anyway. I wouldn't have done the placement because there's no way I'm going to live in a bloody care home, is there? And effectively, what happened is the council that I was with when I was living at home, because university is only a temporary place of residence, your local borough is still responsible for you, which is your permanent address that you reside at, which in my case was Somerset. And Somerset had to put a case forward for me to get funding to stay at a neuro rehabilitation centre, which had 24/7 care and fully accessible, you know, accommodation. I had my own sort of bedroom, living room, kitchen, diner, all in one, with my own living space. But the point was, I was living in an acute, you know, neurological centre that wasn't really suitable environment for me to really be living in. But it was the only way that I could conduct my job, because there was no rented properties available. And I don't know about you, Julian, if you've ever tried to find rented accommodation before.
I tried when I was 17, so obviously that was quite a long time ago, and I was told quite firmly they didn't even let to people my age. So you had to be 18, I think. I'm not sure if that's still the rule, but it probably is. So I left college, didn't go to university, but I was 17 when I left college, and I couldn't get anywhere, so I had to move back in with my mum in the middle of nowhere, really. Lovely place, but nothing there. And so I lived there for about 3 or 4 years, and in the end I did go into a care home. But they found one which doesn't exist anymore, which only had young people in it, young people with neuromuscular diseases, a bit like you and me. So that was quite interesting, and it was kind of horrible and quite a lot of fun all at the same time. You know, there, it was what was nice was I got to go and live in Bournemouth, which was fun. It was kind of it was the biggest place I'd ever lived up to that point, and it was quite useful to get to know sort of living in a big town, really. I wouldn't call it a city, really. And not by being by the sea was lovely as well. And after that, I managed to persuade my council. So even though I lived in Bournemouth, I was still under the council that I was under originally. That was Hampshire.
Yeah.
And so if I wanted my own place, I had to move back to Hampshire. So I had to leave all my friends behind and move away from Bournemouth and go and live. Well, I moved to the town that was closest to Bournemouth on the railway line, because I was assured that it had a manned railway station. And when I did all the awkward stuff about the flat, and there was quite a lot of awkward stuff there, they had basically had to knock holes in it and put ramps in, and it was all very industrial, and you can probably do it a lot easier now than they did then. But when they give me the flat, I went to the station to get on the train to go and see my friends in Bournemouth, and there was somebody in the booth, and they said, "I'm not allowed out, so you can't get on the train because we're not going to put the ramp up." So that was a lack of research there. A bit off topic. The housing grants to do the work, because it was council stock, it wasn't too bad, because after me, they would just let it to someone else who had similar kind of access needs that I did. But if it had been...
So I think that's, I just think that's a particularly important point, because I've seen a couple of, certainly most recently with a family that has a young child with SMA, and, they're trying to find an accessible property for their child.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, you know, in the area, in the catchment area they're in, you know, even on just the same road, there's like one house that is fully accessible that meets the needs of their child, and nobody's living in it. And yet it's taken, so the council, I don't believe, have even moved them into this property, and it's available. And, you know, it makes me wonder how many houses are actually out there that are accessible for people like us that just aren't being used, yet we need them. And I don't know. And what's really interesting is Dermot's kindly given us an article here from the BBC. And, you know, I mentioned that, you know, the way that I mentioned trying to find private rented accommodation, all right, it's like trying to find a needle in a haystack without the needle in the haystack. Do you know what I mean? It's almost like you've got to get the needle yourself. You've got to carry it all the way and then put it in the haystack, and then you've got to rustle the haystack to find the needle to pull it out again. Yeah. And that's what it's like. And it's quoted, it's in here in this article by the BBC, that the UK's lack of accessible housing has been described as a hidden crisis by the Equalities and Human Rights Commission.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
A hidden crisis.
You and I would both, I mean, although our experiences are probably 30 years apart, I'd completely agree. Even if you've got money and you can go and buy a house, you can't. You might have to buy something. You can't actually get in. I mean, I had to sit outside my house for 8 hours when I bought my house while a carpenter built half a ramp so I could get into it. And they're all like that, you know. That's the problem, really. And I think if the councils had, if they had more housing stock, full stop, really, to be honest. But that's another argument.
Yeah, I think the councils have one part to play in terms of having more accessible housing and making it easier for people like us to get funding, because it can be such a laborious, you know, process to go through, and it can be time consuming, it can be debilitating, and you know, in some aspects it does make you think about why people would prefer to go to the private rented sector, because sometimes you've got less hoops to go through, you know, to get a property. I'm not talking about the requirements that you need within the house, but just to be able to get a property can be easier. And two, being in private rented accommodation, certainly for the younger generation, it offers a lot more flexibility. You know, for somebody like yourself, Julian, you're much settled down in your life, you know, that career, work-wise, et cetera, is, you know where you are. But for young people that, you know, might be changing jobs every couple of years, want the, you know, the flexible lifestyle, you just don't have it in the private rented sector.
No, you don't. And the way I got around that when my career was pretty much as you described, every couple of years a new job, was I commuted a lot, and I kind of missed half my kids growing up, and I spent a lot of time on the road, and I stayed out away from the house a long time, and I did a lot of miles, and that's, you know, that's a big problem. But you can't move. Well, you can, but it's very difficult. It's very difficult. And the private rented sector, I suppose, is something that you know more about than I do, really. So, I mean, what's your experience of finding somewhere that you think could be suitable and then doing something about that from that point?
Well, I'll give you a very good example, right? So, when you're looking for accommodation in private rented sector, the first place you'll go to is a estate agent. So you'll go to a estate agent, so you go to somewhere like Rightmove, and you go to rented, and you'll then try and use their keyword search terms to find accessible or wet room or wheelchair entry or something like that. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, it's a bit like trying to find an accessible hotel. You know, if they don't understand your needs and they've not got the filters to search that out, you've got no chance in hell.
Yeah.
And so for me, the recent property that I was living in, I only found, luckily on the off chance, by looking through the photos that showed me that the ensuite bedroom had a wet room. And I realized on the floor plan it was downstairs, and that in order for me to get into the house, there was a step. And I knew that a step is a nice, easy workaround, as once I'm in the house, everything on the ground floor is accessible. I've got a wet room, I can put my bed in, I can use a portable hoist. Happy days. You know, we're not looking for a lot of difficult things here. We're just asking for a house that's all on the, not that part, the majority of the house is on the ground floor, that has an ensuite shower room that's big enough for all of our equipment, that allows us to get around. We don't need a huge much more than that. So it's really difficult. And I think in some respects, estate agents have a big part to play. I would imagine, right, if you were to go around and do a review of all of the estate agents up and down the country on the high streets, how many of them actually have wheelchair accessible entries into the estate agents? And I bet you 3/4 of them all have steps with no ramps to get in. And that just tells you everything you need to know about the housing market. It's not even accessible to get into a bloody estate agents. So, you know, that gives you the type of scale we're up against. And I'm just reading here that the UK has no strategy, or lack of a UK strategy, to build accessible housing. And apparently here it says it's up to local authorities to set and enforce accessible targets on housing. However, just 5% are requiring developers to construct wheelchair suitable housing according to the ECHR, and there's only one exception in the UK, and that's London, and that's been enforced since 2004, that 10% of new builds have needed to be wheelchair accessible or adaptable. But the point is, that's being driven by local authorities. What needs to happen is we need private building companies to wake up to the actual potential of the market size for people like us that want to be able to live in private rented accessible housing. And I think once they get to that point, only in the future will we start to see that being more appropriate for us. But I mean, the funding's a hard one, right? So looking at here, there's also something to do with, okay, so let's talk about private rented housing. Let's say you find somewhere and you find that you can make do with the property, and let's say you need an automatic door entry system put on, and that means drilling into the door, the ceiling, maybe doing some electrical stuff. You might want an emergency beeper system put in. You might want automatic curtains and light switches, which means doing various things to the property. You might need a ramp, a fixed ramp put in. And in private rented sector, you obviously need landlord's permission.
Yeah.
Now, there's a big issue here, isn't there, Julian, about what happens when you leave the property?
Yeah, because my understanding is, unless it's a council place or probably housing association, and even some of those, they require you to leave the property in the condition that you originally rented it. So you will be required to take all of that out and make good all of the damage, as they would view it, to the property afterwards. So even if somebody moves into a rented accommodation and it's suitable for you or me, for instance, it might be suitable for a lot of other people afterwards, but they'll then require all of that equipment to be removed.
Which is barking. What's frustrating here is that in some respects you feel let down by the government because you're having to go to private rented sector because the government can't support you in finding accommodation quickly to live in, to give you that ability to move, you know, be flexible with your life. And so you go into the private rented sector, and yes, they'll give you funding to get stuff done, but then the cost that you incur to put that property back to a suitable state once you leave is a lot of money. And not everybody has that money available.
No.
And, you know, you almost feel,
and that's
you
throwaway
almost feel
money
let
well.
Down.
That's throwaway money.
Yeah.
So you don't, it's not a returnable deposit. It's the money that you just have to pay out. So not only do you pay the deposit and all your rent, you then have to pay out probably thousands to put stuff right.
Yeah, and you know, it's really, really frustrating that we then get penalised, you know. But I suppose if you've got an understanding landlord that understands your situation, I would imagine there's a significant bunch of very nice landlords out there that would actually probably happily keep some of the changes that you've done for other people coming into the property in the future.
Yeah.
But you can't always guarantee it, and it's a big risk.
Things like wet rooms and things like that, more and more people have them anyway. Yeah. So, you know, those kind of things are all right. Ramps are easily removable. So to be honest, you literally take them with you to your next property. You know, you'll probably need it at the front or the back. Same with door openers. You can take them and it's a bit of making do, but there's some other major things. You can see there's a nice big door behind me. Taken a lot of time and a lot of effort to get that size doorway so I don't scrunch my elbows when I go through. And you can't, you know, putting that back is a nightmare, really. And even getting permission to do that, to be honest, is a bit of a nightmare.
It's interesting here, right? So there's a comment here from a girl in the article And it says, I feel forced into not getting the right adaptations when renting through the fear of a landlord saying no or the local authority not funding it unless it's your forever home. What 20-something-year-old lives in forever home at that age? And it's a very good point. And what's very interesting is we then go back and look at the Disability Facilities Grant, which is aimed at helping people make adaptations to their home, whether it be a home that you're buying or renting.
Yep.
However, when you're renting, there's a caveat. And the caveat is that your applicants must intend to stay at a property for 5 years to be eligible. And it becomes easier to, so basically you have to evidence that you're going to be living in that rented property for a long time,
yep.
But to evidence and warrant for those changes to happen.
Yeah.
But how many young people know they're going to be at that place for however many years? And then you've also got to take into account, a landlord can quite easily turn around and say, I'm sorry, Mr. Wintersgill, but I need you out of the house in 4 months because I need this for my elderly relative, or I'm selling up my estate and you need to be gone. And then you've got that added implication just thrown at you. So in some respects, you've got, you know, I don't think there's any real positives about the private rent sector, to be quite honest with you, because you can go through and get something adapted and suit your needs, and then all of a sudden you get a curveball thrown at you and you've got to move again. And so reassurance-wise, you could argue local authority housing is much better, but the point is people should have the option to access
and not only that as well, local authority housing is in very particular areas, so you know, if it suits where you want to live, that's fine, but if it doesn't, then that's quite difficult. Or if you're moving, as you say, you know, if you've got a new job in London, you try going to London and getting a local authority housing, it's just not feasible, frankly. There's hundreds and thousands of people on their lists ahead of you, and you know, they've lived there their whole lives and they still haven't got somewhere. So it's really quite difficult. Interestingly, the caveat about the 5 years is also true for private properties. If you move and sell your house, you have to pay back the grant.
And what's interesting, so since I've been in the private rented sector, it's been very difficult to get ceiling hoists. It's been very difficult to get closed mat toilets. It's been very difficult to get automatic open and door entry systems. It's all possible, but it's very difficult. And this particular girl in this article by the BBC has also said, I also worried about substantial changes like a wet room, automatic doors, a wash and blow dry loo wouldn't be approved. And these are all adaptations that we need to give us dignity. And, you know, if we're in rented sector or we're renting back in 5 years, we might not get that for us. And, you know, I just think there's definitely a major issue here that needs to be changed in terms of how the government look at us, in terms of giving us the equipment and the funding that we need to make it suitable for us to live properly. And what's happening is that people like this girl and myself, we're having to, you know, have people wipe our bums. We've had portable hoists instead of ceiling hoists.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, portable hoists, they're there to serve a temporary purpose. They're not a fixed solution. And it is difficult for carers to actually get you positioned correctly in your wheelchair in a portable hoist. It's difficult to navigate. And also what you're finding is care agencies now are refusing to use portable hoists with one carer. So you have to have a double up. Even though your care may not need a double up, you're being forced to have a double up because they refuse to operate a portable hoist with one member of staff for health and safety, which is just absolutely barking mad. And so the council in some terms shoot themselves in the foot because now they're having to pay me extra money to pay for two carers to come in when I could just have a ceiling hoist, which only warrants one PA.
Yeah.
You know? So it's just, everything's just completely backwards. But anyway,
Doesn't make it easy. I think if I was going to say that the only advantage of the private rented sector, I suppose, is you have the possibility to move wherever you want, whenever you want. The reality of it is probably, it certainly sounds to me like it's almost impossible to find somewhere to move to. And if you do, you either have to be really lucky and eagle-eyed on some website to spot the property, or you just have to make do with what you can get away with, and it's not necessarily going to be perfect for you.
No, and that's exactly what I've had to do over the last couple of years at this other property. Is, you know, you constantly feel like you're compromising all the time through no fault of your own, and it's kind of like you shouldn't be having to compromise, because, you know, it's just not suited, you know, for your needs. And just to finish up here, there are, by the looks of it, a couple of organizations coming through now that are looking to try and improve the amount of private rented accommodation there is out there. So there's a company called Habinteg, and they are basically looking at providing a online search function that allows you to identify accessible housing. That's not quite true. What they're doing is they're developing a pilot accessible housing database that disabled people can use to find more information around accessible homes in the private rented space. So it looks like that in the future it's going to improve, but in the short term it's going to continue.
There always used to be disabled estate agents, or, you know, estate agents of disabled accessible properties, I should say. I never really found them to be of much use.
That's because they don't understand disability, Julian.
The problem was more fundamental than that. You know, if you wanted to move, to Luton, they had a house in Sunderland. Mm-hmm. You know, it was that simple. You just weren't going to get wherever you wanted to be. Anyway, there we go. I think that's the end of our chat with that, I think.
A good one.
I'd like to sum it up in a nice upbeat way, but I don't think we're going to get there.
I don't think we possibly can. I think, you know, we have to be brutally honest and say that, you know, the private rented sector is difficult. You have to be lucky to find the right place. You have to be in the right place at the right time. You know, you do have to constantly be searching all manner of websites and estate agents. And it can be quite, disheartening sometimes, because you just want something to pop up and it won't. But you just got to keep going, I suppose. And the funding can be difficult to get access to. You will get funding to get, you know, adaptations done to the house, but it's just all of this constant fighting and processes that we have to go through all the time to get stuff that we need.
Yeah, it's never easy.
Here we are.
Yep. Okay.
It's not, but that's it for today. So thanks, guys. That's a quick conversation about renting in the private sector.
You've been listening to the Living with SMA podcast. We hope you can join us again next time. But in the meantime, please don't forget to like and subscribe so you don't miss an episode. You can find out more on our website at smauk.org.uk.